You've said before that when you were growing up, people kept talking about how funny you were, telling you how funny you were, but you never really considered it a practical career choice. But of course, here we are.
52 years later. You know, I was from the Midwest, very practical, and it was a talent I had. It just was a way I thought, but I never thought of it in terms of a livelihood. You know, I was much too practical for that. You know, you don't. I mean, and I was in a stock company just for enjoyment. You know, doing plays in suburban Chicago. I never bought into the idea that a Broadway producer's car breaks down, you know, in front of the playhouse I'm appearing at, and he comes in and say you'd be perfect as Biff, you know. So there was just something I did, and never thought of it as a living. And then one day after service and after working as an accountant for a couple of years, I said I'm going to give this a year and see if I can make a living at it.
Your breakout work was, of course, the 1960 record "The Button Down Mind" of Bob Newhart. It netted a Grammy, of course, in 1961 for Album of the Year. Remains among the top-selling comedy albums of all time. Why do you think the album landed so well with its audience and retains that popularity today?
It really was a sea change in terms of the type of comedy that was being done at that time. Mike and Elaine and Shelley Berman and Lenny Bruce, Mort Saul, Johnny Winters. It was getting away from the "Take My Wife, Please," you know, material that comedians had been doing up until that time. The Henny Youngman and that kind of thing. So it was being at the right place at the right time when this really sea change in comedy happened.
Modern stand-up comedians, to flash forward about 50 years, are now often accused of being pretty crude or lowbrow, of resorting to sort of ribald tactics on stage. But another way, perhaps, of phrasing that is that it's a more honest expression of humor that's been freed from some of the moral limitations that were prevalent in the 50s and early 60s for stage performers. Now, as someone who is performing during both of those eras, how do you describe the trajectory of stand-up comedy from then to now?
Well, comedy always is, it's always pushing the envelope. I mean, in terms of television, I'm a big fan of Everybody Loves Raymond. I thought it was beautifully cast and extremely well written. And but at the same time, if we had submitted any of those stories, the network would have sent it back and said, "You're kidding, right? That's a joke. You know, you don't really think you can go into that area, you know, of having sex with the wife, you know." Humor is always pushing. It's always pushing the boundaries of which is good and which is healthy. And but humor has done that since the beginning of humor.
In today's world of stand-up, who do you see that reminds you of yourself when you were getting started?
Well, I don't know that someone reminds me of myself. Some people have said they've been influenced by me, which, Ellen DeGeneres has publicly said that I was a formative force in her decision to become a comedian, which is wonderful. I mean, if I influenced people and got them into comedy and then for them to be as successful as Ellen has become, and she just, as you know, received the Mark Twain Award, which I received a number of years ago. But I learned from people before me. You know, it's that old bromide that we stand on the shoulders of giants. I was certainly influenced by comedians of the day. Certainly Jack Benny, probably Hope. So if I influence some comedians, I'm very happy. I'm glad that I did, because people influenced me.
Not too long ago, you said that all comedians do is watch people. What do you learn when you watch people? How does that influence your comedy?
You can't not watch. It's a radar that's constantly on. You're not always looking. It's just its antenna that's constantly surveying whatever scene you're in. In other words, you're never really on vacation. You can be in Hawaii and on the beach, and still it's there, and it notices the way somebody tripped over a piece of driftwood, there's no way of turning it off, and you don't want to turn it off. It's what you do.
How has the craft of writing and delivering stand-up comedy changed since you started in the business?
Well, as we said earlier, a lot of the sacred cows are no longer sacred cows. I've said in the past that you know, comedy, one of the functions of comedy is to confront a situation that seems to have no possible logical explanation, and to offer one, however facile, but by doing so, it helps a person move through that and go on with their life. I think that's one of the things that comedians do. We help people get through this dumb place we all inhabit.
After more than 50 years of touring the nation and the world for supportive stand-up comedy, some people would probably just hang it up. They'd say, that's it, that's a career, I'm done. But you're still hitting the road, and that's in fact why you're coming to Tennessee. What do you get out of the experience of touring today?
Well, it's a narcotic, really. It really is. I can't think of any other way of describing it. It's inconvenient. You're on the planes and they lose the baggage and you have to change planes, and then you're late and you miss that flight and all that goes into it. But then you finally get there and you're finally on stage, and it's working. It's a narcotic that you don't want to ever give up. I said the alternative is Sunset Boulevard, to just sit in a darkened room in your house and have Eric von Stroheim come in with and ask you what episode of the Bob Newhart Show you wanted to watch that day. You know, I didn't see that as a way of life. I did a concert recently in Carmel, I think it was around October, November of 2012. And it went very well, and my wife happened to be with me on that particular trip. So we're in the car driving back to the hotel, and I said to her, and I guess this sums it up as well as anything. I said, why would anyone want to stop doing that? Why would anyone want to stop making people laugh? You know, I just can't imagine it. It's where I started. I want to be able to do it as long as I'm physically able to, as I am now. So, the best way I can describe it, it's a narcotic, and you need a fix, and you get on a plane and you go and you get a fix.
You know, a couple of years ago, I interviewed the comedian Steve Martin, and we talked almost about anything but comedy. We talked about his hobbies, including collecting and studying art, playing bluegrass music on his banjo, and I was naturally curious. You've reached a plateau where you've made your name in comedy. The legacy is already established. What else are you doing with your time these days? What other hobbies might you have that you're doing when you're not working on your material?
Well, it's kind of boring, I guess. I spend time with the grandchildren, spend time with my kids. My wife and I travel with the Rickles very often, and we're in the midst of preparing for a trip now. She just had 3 years ago. She had a liver transplant, and successfully, and we haven't been able to travel, so we're looking forward to that. I enjoy just getting up in the morning and seeing what the day holds.
Right. There's certainly worse ways to be off, I'm sure. Now, I've always wanted to ask a comedian, someone whose adult life has been built around making people laugh, what makes you laugh? What do you find funny?
Oh, I find funny other comedians. There's nothing I enjoy more than I make a point of watching Letterman or Leno or Jimmy Kimmel if I think there's going to be a comedian on. Because I'm one of the people, I believe that comedians should get half their pay for just showing up. It's a tough thing. It's a tough world. There's a lot of pressure, and it's fun to watch someone who's really good at it. And it also keeps you in touch with areas that the young comedians are getting into. There's no envy there. It's just, it's one jazz musician watching another jazz musician. You just enjoy it.
Bob Newhart, it has been a real pleasure to talk to you, and we thank you for taking the time to join us today on All Things Considered.
Thank you, Brandon.